Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 20th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., I have, for various reasons, I was thinking a little bit about The Lord of the Rings the other day. And this is a, there is a point here. If you go through all three of the books of Lord of the Ring, which I did, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, at the end, Frodo finally makes it back to the Hobbiton, to town, or wherever they came from. And he's kind of disappointed because the Shire has changed, right? There's a, he can see a smokestack on the horizon, right? There's industry, people, the hobbits are building, I don't know if they're making Keebler cookies or something, but all the elves are busy, all the hobbits are busy doing something. And the sort of innocence of the little hobbit village before Frodo went out and they had the big war of the rings there is lost. I was kind of thinking the same thing about our country. I mean, Donald Trump has basically come in and done things that are vile and has attacked democracy in ways that are difficult to square with anything, right? It's a, it's a rupture from the way the country has been operating in terms of its commitment, even a pretend commitment to democracy. Donald Trump has no pretense that he believes in democracy, right? He believes in Donald Trump. And so I guess the and of course what's happened is that everyone wants to resist. I mean, I've got bumper stickers on my car that says resist, right? So resistance is great. But I guess there was an article I saw somewhere, and I'll try and post it. But basically, I have to ask myself, am I resisting in order to go back to the United States the way it was on November 7th, 2017? Right? Am I resisting Trump in order to go back to sort of a corporate democracy where we have all the stuff that was going on November 7th before the strong man came in? And so I have to ask the question, you know, what am I resisting for, and should I not be working in favor of some new vision for the country, right? Something that is not November 7th, like, it is different. It's a better place, right? Is that crazy? I mean, have you thought about that at all?
No, it's not crazy at all. And it reminds me of a famous line from the late Republican Congressman Jack Kemp, who said that it is not enough to say what you are against. You have a moral obligation to say what you are for. So in the name of, so as people resist Trump's agenda and resist Trump's vision, there will have to be, and obviously from a political standpoint, this, there will be a requirement to be an articulation of a series of policy concerns that one wishes to implement in place of the sort of authoritarian agenda that Trump represents. So from a climate perspective, obviously, you know, it's not enough to simply say you're against, you know, Scott Pruitt, or you're against, you know, him trying to resurrect the coal jobs. You have to articulate that you are for 100% clean energy, moving away thoroughly away from fossil fuels, moving towards a thorough clean energy future. And in terms of so many other issues, one has to sort of lay out what they want the future to be. Because obviously, you know, Trump laid out a dark vision, but he laid out a vision. I think there's an old Bill Clinton line about people will choose someone who is wrong and strong. They will choose somebody who articulates a vision, even if that vision is questionable, versus somebody who articulates an abstract vision or unclear or obscure vision.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I think the question of you know, a clean energy future. But I guess for my money, that's almost too narrow. It's almost, I think that as a society, I mean, I worry that as a society, sort of Western culture is at the end of a 500-year run of the Enlightenment, right? Mm-hmm. The forces at work, the forces that are preventing us from having clean energy are, you know, 14th century kind of superstition and closed-mindedness, right? Mm-hmm. The people that reject science. So like it's like the society that you want to build on the other side of Trump is a society where science and or sort of Enlightenment views carry the day. But I mean, that's way, way big, right? And to say that science should rule, I mean, that's kind of, that's passe all by itself. But I mean, there's some historical momentum that's happening, and what, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is what Trump is and what Brexit was and all the things that are happening in Europe. Maybe that's just some temporary blip and we're going to get back to a rational sort of approach to the future. But it seems like we're not there and nobody's calling for it, right?
I think we're going to get there, but I think, you know, it goes a lot to human psychology, you know, sometimes you have scenarios where there's I don't know if it was Robert Frost that articulated that, but or W.H. Auden or some poet who basically articulated the idea, and I'm going to botch the paraphrase.
That's okay. I forgive you.
That you know, the forces of enlightenment aren't motivated, but the forces of darkness and going backwards are motivated. And you know what you have to happen is a scenario where the forces of enlightenment are in fact motivated. And we can use an obvious parallel of media. You know, people talk. You know, we've mentioned before when Bernie Sanders talked about how there needed to be something that was a pro-science, pro-fact version of Fox News, because people want to rail against Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch, but they organized themselves to advance a dark vision. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't organize to advance a more positive vision, then those who have organized around the dark vision will win.
Territory. I agree with you that's the case. And I guess I'm just trying to get my arms around. It's a big deal, but it's like the future that I want after Trump, is it one where every child, male or female, gets a good education, grounded in actual facts? And that's sufficient. If you have that, then everything else will flow, right? Mm-hmm. You'll have clean energy. You'll have, you know, Black Lives Will Matter. You'll have free immigration. All the good stuff comes if you have everyone be educated. Or, you know, what are the, because, I mean, the clean energy, unless clean energy issues flow naturally from the society's, you know, internal drive, then it's always some kind of add-on that you're trying to glue on to the way the society is, right? And you say, okay, we have a society that we all want to live in the suburb, but we're going to have a wind turbine to power our electric cars going back and forth. I don't know. It seems as if the restructuring of the world has to be consistent with these things that you want to flow naturally from it. Oh man, that's a mouthful of oatmeal. I mean,
to narrow down my point about Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch, I'm going to go to an even more controversial figure for obvious reasons, and that's a fellow by the name of Steve Bannon. Okay. If you read anything about Steve Bannon, he has a specifically defined, very dark, very sick, but a specifically defined vision of the world. He has a vision of, to use Limbaugh's book, the way things ought to be. Mm-hmm. Now, who is going to be the anti-Steve Bannon? Who is going to have a specific and defined vision of a better way for things to be, of a healthier way for things to be, of a more just and equitable way, vision for things to be? I mean, we go back to, you know, think, you know, when JFK talked about his new frontier, when JFK's 1961 inaugural address, there's a great vision of trying to articulate a better world, to say that a better world is possible. You know, that marching song, you know, we are unstoppable, another world is possible, and that a better world is possible. That has to be articulated by the indivisible forces, the forces of resistance to Trump, because if that is not articulated, then eventually that energy burns out, and the dark vision, the motivated vision, when you read these stories about Steve Bannon working 16-hour days, he's motivated as hell to advance his vision of the world.
Right.
And if somebody is not the anti-Steve Bannon to be just as motivated the other way, then the Steve Bannons of the world are going to win and dominate.
But I hear you, and I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. I guess my understanding is Steve Bannon thinks that Islam is in a battle with Christianity. I mean, when you see the you peel back the layers, and that sort of Western culture, if it's Vladimir Putin or whoever, has to be prepared to do have a bloodbath with Islam and China, and that's his vision. I guess, and that translates into policies. But I think the positive vision of the world, and then just thinking out loud, the positive vision of the world is not a set of policies, right? It's not a set of quotas for green energy or anything like that. It is a vision of a world where people collaborate. But I mean, it sounds like, you know, peace and unicorns when you talk about this stuff, right? A world, but it's something that is more comprehensive than particular policy initiatives. And maybe that's what Bannon has. He has this great, you know, this Armageddon vision of the world, right? And he's preparing the United States to do battle with everyone. Oh, my God. And you're right. There's no competing. I mean, it's hard to make a competing vision with the Sauron, right? He wants to have this big fight.
But if you look throughout history, people did have a competing and positive and well-articulated vision. Look at Martin Luther King, for example. You know, look at Gandhi, for example. I mean, there's so many examples throughout history. I think today you can say that Bill McKibben has a fairly well-articulated vision of the way the world should be. So it can be done, but it has to be done.
Well, and I guess that's a good point. I mean, the vision, the comprehensive sort of guiding principle is the value and legitimacy of each person, right? I think that's what Gandhi would say, what Martin Luther King would say, and Bill McKibben, you know, with talking about the Dakota Access Pipeline, that each person has to be allowed to maximize his or herself. And that then is an operating principle to doing lots of other things. I guess. I don't know.
But it does have to be formulated into actual policies. You know, I know this argument has been brought up so many times, it's a pretty much a cliche at this point, but it's the argument about why the Occupy movement was regarded as having faded, that it did not go to version 2.0 in terms of actual policy and running candidates based on that policy. Now, I would counter argue that the embodiment of the Occupy vision was to a certain extent articulated and did embody policy, and that the embodiment of that policy was the Sanders presidential campaign. But to the extent that it didn't go further than that, to the extent that it didn't expand beyond that, you see the failures of Occupy in that respect. And that's why this indivisible movement has to sort of, you know, learn from the failures of the past and the mistakes of the past in order to have a force, a political force, and a cultural force that can beat back the Steve Bannons and the Donald Trumps.
It's a very interesting point you just made, and I will accept it. Even though I'm talking about peace and unicorns and these enormous overarching sort of ways society should be, there's an article by David Frum in The Atlantic, right, that I can post. And, of course, David Frum was a speechwriter for Bush, I think. I mean, But he was saying the way to resist is to have a particular goal and win it, right? That's what the Tea Party. They take one little thing and they all got together and they won that. And that's how you build the momentum going forward. So to your point that you have to have something. And the problem is that when you have a broad-based movement, almost any specific goal leaves out half, you know, the majority of the movement, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where sort of these progressive movements, I think, get bogged down, because they're trying to include so much, so many different interests, that to keep everyone in the tent, that it becomes an unmanageable thing. But the David Frum article was basically how to run a resistance, how to resist it. And it looked like good advice to progressives from this guy who's a pretty much of a conservative. And he was saying more or less what you're saying. It's like you have to win somewhere. You have to do some specific thing.
And to your point, it goes to the whole thing about intersectionality, how, you know, we talk about intersectionality with regard to progressives. But remember, right-wingers pioneered intersectionality. And a perfect example is the Koch brothers. Everybody talks about how non-religious the Koch brothers are and how the Koch brothers are personally pro-choice. Well, they pumped a lot of money into right-wing religious organizations and anti-abortion organizations, because those organizations would have their back to defend fossil fuel interests. Yeah. So they understood intersectionality in a very, very clear way.
Yeah, I mean, it's I can't pretend that I have or we have some solution here, but I think it's an interesting way to think about what's happening, right? Is that Trump is a disruption of history. He's a change in American history for better or worse. And the question is, if we want it to be a change for the better and just be a dark moment that gave birth to a better thing, what is that better thing, right? Mm-hmm. And pick that, and that's where we go. One other thing I have to say, DR, before we should probably quit, but I heard on the radio today that I guess right about now, like it couldn't be now, but John F. Kennedy gave his John F. Kennedy's birthday was this week, right? Mm-hmm. JFK is the centenary of his birthday. I guess he was born in 1917. They showed a tape, or they played a tape on the radio of his speech to the Massachusetts legislature just before he got inaugurated. And to the point you were making before, I mean, he was articulating this vision of what service was and why he was going to, you know, and how Massachusetts' role in history. And it was quite inspiring. And you look, in such a contrast to where we are now with this rambling, confabulating guy. But
and how interesting, speaking of connecting things, how interesting you reminded me when you mentioned JFK. Remember that 2008 Greenpeace commercial right before the 2008 election that depicted Kennedy? They sort of re-edited old historical footage of Kennedy to sort of depict him as saying that to basically create the idea that if he were alive today, he'd be calling for action on clean energy.
Yeah, he probably would be. Oh, dear. Well, look, since we've solved this problem, next week we're going to tackle the reason why small children cry at night. And the week after that, we'll talk about making crabgrass stop growing in people's lawn. All right? We'll try and deal with those things.
See, we're making America great again.
I think. So if anybody's listening to this and you have a vision of what America ought to be, please put it on the comment or send us a note or something, because I think it's an interesting and it's a much more hopeful topic than watching the Russian cruise ships drive back and forth by the nuclear sub-base in Groton, Massachusetts.
Exactly.
Anyway, DR, thank you very much. Let me read I'll put all this stuff on the blog. You can find us on Facebook. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for your philosophizing.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening into the philosophical nonsense we've been spouting for the last 20 minutes. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.